Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to tackle a very basic subject. I think it's worthwhile visiting a subject like this from time to time, because we sometimes get into sort of the esoteric corners of nutrition. We talk about a very, very new or specialized supplement or a particular unusual disease entity. And today we're going to sort of back up and talk about foundational nutrition. We're going to try and provide you with some basics in terms of the latest nutritional science. With us today is Geralyn Swindle. She is the Nordic Naturals educator with over 20 years experience in the natural health industry. And Geralyn joins us today to talk about the huge importance of foundational nutrition in our health and wellness. And this, of course, is passion for both Geralyn and myself. And I really feel very strongly about the crucial nature of foundational nutrition as really the underlying principle behind optimal health. So welcome to our podcast, Geralyn.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, since you're associated with Nordic Naturals, which, of course, is one of our very fine sponsors, before we get into the subject matter, Nordic is running a very, very interesting initiative on behalf of kids in the U.S. So tell us a little bit about that.
We are. You know, it's buy a bottle and help us build a playground. This is a big, important thing to us. We know, we already know that 60 minutes of play in a day, it's been shown to provide various health benefits for children. We know how important it is for them to do this, but we also know that so many children today are not actually achieving that. And part of the problem sometimes is not having the facilities to be able to do that. So that's the purpose of this. So the way it works is very simple. If you buy a children's product from Nordic Naturals anytime in July, August, or September, we're going to take the total sales from that time frame, and we're going to donate up to $75,000 to Carter's Kids directly for that purpose in order to get a playground built so that we're able to continue to contribute to the ability for kids to get outside and be able to get some play in their day.
Okay, well, that's a great initiative because we know that health products like fish oil are very beneficial for kids, but if they're sitting on the couch or if they're peering into their mobile device looking for Pokemon, that's not the end all and be all of health. So, kudos
exactly.
Kudos to Nordic for undertaking that initiative. So let's get into the subject today, which is foundational nutrition. What's that all about?
Well, for me personally, I have a child, and so I'm always looking at things from that perspective. And one of the things that came to my mind as I thought about what is nutritional health for children, what is that foundational nutrition for all of us, it came to mind this idea of what we teach children. So we don't just teach children how to deal with trouble. We actually teach them how to stay out of it. As a parent, that's always your goal, is let's show children, let's explain to them how to make good decisions, how to invest in their future. And for me, I really see foundational nutrition as just like that. So instead of constantly chasing fixing a problem, let's back way up and see if we can't start at the beginning and avoid some of these things to begin with. So that's really the way that I look at foundational nutrition, is making good decisions up front.
Okay. So,
you know, a big part, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in terms of a practical implication, I mean, clearly that's an important principle, but how is that fleshed out in terms of developing a nutritional strategy?
Sure. So when you think about the human body and you boil it down to a very, very basic place, which would be the cell. So if you think about cells in our body, you tell someone that our whole bodies are made up of cells, they really get it. But again, back to children, I was helping my son with his homework, and they were studying cells in the human body. And there was this wonderful drawing that he brought home that showed how clearly cells really are everything that we are. So it was a picture of a cell, and it showed that cells come together to create tissue. Tissue comes together to create organs. Organs come together to create organ systems. And those organ systems really are our bodies. Our bodies are nothing but a group of these organ systems. Even the immune system, which many people don't consider, don't look at as an organ system in the same way as, say, our digestive system, but it is still cell-based. The immune system is still driven by cells. So having healthy cells is a really important part of having a healthy body. Whatever our cells are doing well, our bodies are doing well. If they're not healthy, we simply can't be healthy because they are everything we are. So when you look at it from that perspective, nutrition that is foundational then becomes feeding those cells. Any nutrition that is going to nourish those cells so that they're healthy and functioning properly, that inherently is going to be foundational nutrition because it's supporting every part of us. Then when you think about those cells doing their job, all of these different jobs that the cells do in our body, you have to think of the other ways that we can support them, the function of that system as well. And a personal pet project or subject of mine is our ecosystem. Having the right bacteria, the right microbes that are living in and on our bodies actually really support not only the function of multiple systems, but again, back to the immune system. It has a very special relationship with our immune system as well.
I'm pretty sure that along the way, we're going to have to undertake a consideration of essential fatty acids because they play such an important role in cellular health and literally in the composition of the cells, the so-called cell wall, which is really not a wall. It's a permeable membrane that allows communication between cells, that permits intake of healthy nutrients and also permits disposal of waste products, but also the products of cell metabolism and the very mitochondria in itself is impacted by essential fatty acids. I think that's where, you know, maybe a little bit of a segue into a discussion of omega-3 fatty acids, omega-6 fatty acids comes in.
Absolutely. I agree completely. That membrane on the cell does all of the things that you mentioned. It's incredibly crucial to being able to nourish and have proper function of all of our cells. And when we think about that membrane, you know, it's this phospholipid bilayer, fancy way of saying it's made of fat, right? So with it being made of fat, having all these fats in there, the type of fat, the fats that make up that membrane have a really important role in how it functions, how the membrane functions. We need it to be fluid and flexible so that it can do all the things you said, letting in those nutrients and letting out waste. So we need to make sure that we have a really good mix of fats in the membrane. Now, two fats in our diet that are essential, we don't make enough of them on our own. We have to get them in our diet. They're omega-6 and omega-3s. Now, omega-6s are going to be things like nuts and grains, that wonderful tub of hummus and those blue corn chips, really healthy, high fiber, high protein lunch, but it is going to be very, very high in omega-6 fats. Now, omega-6 fats are essential. We need to get them. So that isn't necessarily a bad thing. And omega-6s also perform duties in the body, the cellular signaling that these fats put out that are necessary. We need these things to happen. Omega-3s, we get that primarily from two different sources. You can get a plant-based form that comes from things like flaxseed and chia seed and leafy green vegetables. Those are very healthy. They're foods I love and eat all the time. The only issue that we can have sometimes with this short-chain omega-3, the ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, that it puts out for us is that a lot of people don't convert that at a very high rate. Mm-hmm. And with that being the case, it can be difficult to get enough EPA and DHA, which are the long-chain fatty acids of omega-3 that we're really looking for and that we get the most deficient in, especially in this country. So if you're looking for the actual EPA and DHA to replace that deficiency, then you're going to want to look to marine sources, things like fish, and then also our algae. We have an algae formula that does provide, even though it's vegetarian, it does provide actual EPA and DHA. So when you
that would be for a strict vegans, for people who are just ethically
no fish,
no nothing with a face. So they don't want to eat any animal products.
Absolutely.
But algae technically, of course, is a plant. So, it, you know, you can actually get EPA, DHA from algae.
That is correct. And that's essentially what the fish eat as well. So it's just kind of going directly to that source for those that prefer to do it that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So a lot is made of the omega 3-6 ratio. You know, there's some controversy about this because some people say, oh, you know, all these, in fact, currently you get the American Heart Association saying have lots of polyunsaturated fats, substitute, you know, vegetable oils, you know, from, instead of butter. And that would mean more, soy oil, canola oil. And those are mostly omega-6 with some, monounsaturated fats, some, olive oil-like fats in them, but they mostly deliver omega-6, not much omega-3. So then the concern is that, is the American diet too laden in omega-6s? And perhaps that's, different than the way we evolved, where we had a little more access to omega-3s than 6s.
Absolutely. And, you know, the whole idea behind things like margarine and these vegetable oils, it was really sort of a, for lack of a better term, it was a witch hunt against saturated fats. That was really considered the culprit of so many things. And that's kind of how that whole thing came about. But it is very true that especially for those people who are consuming large amounts of these types of fats because they really have listened to that information that saturated fats are very bad for us and we need to get all these other forms, they are likely getting very excessive levels of omega-6s, and it can be very difficult to balance that out with omega-3s without some sort of supplementation. You know, when we do our education pieces that the group that I work with that we do, we often talk about things, like I said, that the tub of hummus with the blue corn chips. And we never suggest that people stop eating avocados and, you know, and nuts. We know that these are healthy and necessary foods, but the fats you mentioned are really the types of fats that create huge amounts of omega-6 in our diet. I once heard those fats called the extract of omega-6. It is the most concentrated form of omega-6 fats that we have in our diet in this country. So absolutely.
And there's even some implications for the way that we raise animals in this country because, you know, if you look at the old westerns, you know, on the Chisholm Trail, they drove cattle who grazed on grass from Texas and the Southwest to Omaha, to the slaughterhouses, put them on railroad cars. But these were grass-fed animals prior to industrial farms, where now we have a surfeit of corn. So, in effect, the animals are eating corn instead of grass, which makes for, you know, fatter animals and maybe less chewy beef, bigger profits for agribusiness. But the net result is that the body fat composition of these animals leans more towards omega-6 than omega-3 because grass imparts omega-3 rather than corn, which imparts omega-6.
Absolutely. It's essentially the same problem for the animals that it is for us. So they are less healthy. Their cells are less healthy. They are less healthy. But then when we consume the animals on top of already having a high omega-6 diet, it just compounds the problem for us. So I could not agree with you more on that point.
I once coined a term, you are what you eat eats. But since I coined that, I think it's been it's been taken up by a lot of people. So, you know, the origin remains kind of obscured. But it's not just you are what you eat, but you actually, your own body composition reflects to some extent the foods you consume. And if you're consuming foods that are higher on the food chain, like animal products, the way that they're fed reflects, it actually has an impact on you.
Absolutely. It absolutely does. I agree with you. And, you know, I have to say that any really great coined phrase is going to be copied. So I think that that refers back to...
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Spot on it is. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so primitive peoples, let's face it, you know, they didn't have Nordic Naturals. They, you know, didn't take fish oil pills. Why is this a prudent idea for modern folks to supplement their diets with, in effect, artificial supplements? You know, when, you know, perhaps
sure.
You can say, eat some salmon, you know, have some sardines. It's all good. But should this be a part of routine supplementation for people?
You know, as a personal answer to that, absolutely. It is for me. It is for my child. It is something that I do think is very important. And, you know, the type of brain that when I hear something and it triggers a question, I have to answer that question. And when you talk about long ago, our diets were very, very different for that sort of primal human being. And people have said to me before, they said, well, we didn't have access to fish oil or to supplements and that type of thing. And that's true. We had very different diets. We weren't consuming as much omega-6. We had very different livers than we have now. We had an abundance of enzymes from all of the raw and fresh food that we were eating on a regular basis. And as you mentioned, the animals that we were eating were living an entirely different lifestyle than the ones today. So I do believe that based on that, there is a greater need for supplementing with omega-3s. The big reason behind that is because of that cellular signaling that I mentioned earlier. They do different things in the body. And when you look at the list of what omega-6 does, the reaction that I get from most people is that that list is bad. Things like blood clotting or reduced circulation, all of that, they look at that list and they think, oh, those are bad things, but those are necessary things. Mm-hmm. Our body needs to be able to do that. The problem is that in this country, so many people are getting so much omega-6 and not enough omega-3s. And the omega-3s in their cellular signaling, what they do is whenever an emergency, like I've cut myself, when that has passed, then they return the blood, it returns the blood back to a less clotting state than it's in when I have an injury or an issue. And so it comes in and resolves all of that. So having a good balance between the two makes that system work the way it was meant to work. Having way too much omega-6 turns that list of cellular signals into disease states, which is essentially what it's done in this country.
All right, so it's just an example of what you just talked about is that the Eskimos consume an enormous amount of omega-3 fatty acids from animal blubber. You know, Arctic animals and fish have lots of omega-3. So it turns out if you look at their statistics, they rarely have what's called a thrombotic stroke, which means a blood clot occurs in a small artery in the brain, which is the most common type of stroke in America. 85 or 90% of the strokes in America are thrombotic. But interestingly, and they don't have many strokes, but they actually have a higher incidence of what's called hemorrhagic strokes, maybe because they're probably not getting a lot of vegetable oils because of the Arctic food composition. Not to say that, you know, taking too much fish oil is going to cause you to have a stroke, but, you know, any kind of imbalance can push you in the wrong direction.
That is correct. Yeah, again, it is about a system functioning properly. And, you know, and it's interesting, I'm glad you said that, because I get that question a lot as well. People will say, well, isn't more better? And not always. What we're looking for here is we're looking for a healthy balance. And personally, I believe that's almost always what we're looking for. But certainly in the case of omega-6 and omega-3, we're looking for good function, not to eliminate one or the other.
Okay. This is a good point at which to pause because our listeners know we divide these podcasts into two parts. We're talking to Geralyn Swindle, who is educator for Nordic Naturals, and we're talking about foundational nutrition and essential fatty acids, proper fat intake is crucial to optimal nutrition. We just learned from a big study of the Mediterranean diet that asked the question, how much fat can you consume? The answer is a lot, but it's got to be the right kind. And so we're talking about the right kind of fats for foundational nutrition. In part two, we're going to discuss some of the problems that arise when you have a lack of essential fatty acids, especially deficiencies of omega-3. And we'll talk a little bit about omega-3 quality, because that is important too. A recent study showed that giving rancid fish oil, are you aware of the study, Geraldine? You probably are because you stay on top of this.
Oh, yeah.
Study showed that feeding rancid fish oil to pregnant rats resulted in a 30% mortality rate in their offspring. So the fish oil, yeah, okay, great. But if it's rancid, it can backfire. So we'll talk about that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.